Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. My name is Louis Strasbourg, and I work for Turco Vino. And as Antoinette has said, we are the importer, and we represent Michael Malatz wines in the U.S. That's us. We're represented in Washington, D.C. by our good friends Constantine Wines, who help supply Cork and Fork, and that's it. Thanks for coming.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Antoinette. Thanks, Louis. Thanks, everybody, for joining tonight. Well, tonight, for me, it's tonight. For your, I think it's afternoon. I hope you're all fine, you're all healthy, and you're all okay. I'm happy having the chance giving you a little bit of information about Austrian wine in general, and then, of course, in particular, to the wine estate I'm coming from, and to taste some wines together with you. Let me start a little presentation which should guide you through the evening, and I hope you have fun with today's masterclass, and please place your questions, I think, in the chat, and we can answer, or even after my presentation, you are, of course, very welcome to chat with me and ask your questions live on this presentation, after the presentation. Okay, well, let me share the screen and let's get started. All right. You know already who I am, and I think most of you probably attended the seminar yesterday, where you already got the first introduction about Austrian wine and where Austria is about, where we are located, and so on. But let me give you a quick, now it's working. Again, a quick overview about our country. You see that Austria is a small country, and the wine growing is taking place more in the eastern part, which you can see here. I hope you can follow my mouse here. So it's in the eastern side of Austria where the wine growing takes place, because more to the west, it's where the altitude gets higher and where the mountains are. There you go skiing in the winter, but there's not that much wine growing over there. And you see that the River Danube is a significant landmark running through Austria from west to east. You see this blue line here. And here in this part, so the blue spot here, that's Vienna. That's actually the city of Vienna, which is at the same time also a wine growing area. And I'm located in an area called Kremstal, which is a little bit to the west of Vienna. It's about an hour drive. And it's this region here, marked here with this sign. Talking about climate, maybe just for a few words. Austria is kind of said to be a cool climate area. And if you have a look, you can see that the latitude here close to Vienna is somewhere between Reims and Bonn, which is well known here in France. So, and there are actually four main climate influences which we are facing, which kind of creates this cool climate for our vineyards. You have like the red signs here giving actually the warmer air and kind of the warmer influence to Austria, to the wine growing area, and the blue marks here bringing the cold. So you have the continental Pannonian climate from the east, where warmer winds coming from kind of Hungary, from those area where it's flatter, and you have the warm winds coming through, and also like the Mediterranean climate coming from the south. But on the other hand, you have like an Atlantic climate, which is a little bit more humid and wet and cold, and also cool air from the north. And that brings a cooler climate, giving the typical structure and the typical characteristic to Austrian wine in general. And in general, the Austrian wines, because of this, are always very food friendly. They have a good acid structure. They are kind of juicy, they are fresh, and that's why they are nice to drink. And they are always a good match with food because they make you want to drink more because you don't get tired when drinking Austrian wine because of the acidity, because of the crispiness. And that's what is typical for our characteristic in all our wines. Coming a little bit closer to Kremstal, that's the region where I'm from. Here you see again the River Danube running through. And what's very special about the Kremstal wine growing region is that it's not only located along the River of Krems, which you see here, that's the blue line here coming from the northwest going down to the southeast, and the River Krems ends in the Danube River here. The name given to the Kremstal region comes from both from the River Krems, which we see here, but also from the city of Krems. The city of Krems, it's kind of the wine city in Austria. It's very old. Krems as a city became its city status in 995, so more than 1,000 years ago. And already the Romans settled down here in our area about 2,000 years ago and planted grapes and cultivated vineyards and been kind of the pioneers here to start kind of a really good and long-lasting viticulture. The Kremstal region also has a part in the southern part of the River Danube, and the village is Furt-Palt, that's where we are from. Actually, it's one village, it's one community called Furt, Furt bei Göttwerk. Within this community, we have parts of this village are called Palt or also Eigensteiner Weg. That's other names which are not on the map. But we are located right here in Palt, but Palt belongs to Furt bei Göttwerk. And Göttwerk, you will see in a minute, I think you can see it on certain pictures which we which I show you now, because Göttwerk, it's the name of a monastery which is kind of famous for our area, and it's a significant landmark which you see coming from different directions to Krems from miles apart already, because it's significant and it's based on a little bit kind of a hill, so it's special for us. And also to give you a few numbers for the Kremstal region, we cultivate about 2,400 hectares of vineyards, and more than 50% of those vineyards are planted with Grüner Veltliner. So that's actually a significant number that you can see. The main grape variety here is Grüner Veltliner, and followed by Riesling, which makes about 15% of those 2,400 hectares. The vineyards are located between 200 and 400 meters above sea level. And as you already can probably kind of figure out on this map, we have parts on the northern side of the river, on the southern side, between different altitudes. So we have a lot of different terroirs giving a lot of different possibilities for growing our grape vines, and gives a lot of different possibilities for the character of the wines coming out. And you've probably, I'm just moving back two pages where you can see that there are another areas which are next to the Kremstal region, which is Wachau in the west, it's Kamptal in the north, and it's Wagram and Traisental to the east. All those together, I would say that's the Danube area. And it's maybe the one or the other have been to our area and already discovered or figured out that one area is moving into the other. So they are actually running borders. It's not that one of those region is apart from these from the others neighboring regions. So it's actually one area, and it's actually you cannot really tell, or it's very hard to tell, that for Kremstal there is an own significant characteristic for the wines coming out. Because the differences within the region Kremstal, actually are much bigger and even more than the difference between the regions. So kind of when you think about taking three different Grüne Veltliners, all coming from Kremstal, it could happen that the style or the characteristic is totally different. Because it's so diverse, because you have the parts north of the Danube, south of the Danube, from lower altitude about 200 meters or higher altitude about 400 meters. But on the other hand, it can happen that you have one Grüne Veltliner from Wachau, one from Kremstal, one from Kamptal, and the wines have a similar characteristic. So I just wanted to point out that it's actually not that easy that you can say, okay, this is a typical wine style from Kremstal, or you can compare this wine style to a wine style from Kamptal or from Wachau or from Traisental, because one area is leading into the other, and the borders between those regions, they are rather young, so they have been made kind of by political influence just, let's say, about 50, 60 years ago. But the vineyards planted there are dating back to, I don't know, 500, 700,000 years. So it's more about the particular single vineyard to give a certain characteristic to a wine. Okay. Yeah, this is a picture where you can see the River Danube in the middle. And here on the left, that's the city of Krems. Which is here to the north of the river, and here on the other side, on the southern side, this village actually is called Mautern, and this already belongs to Wachau Valley. So you see the border between Kremstal and Wachau is going kind of over here, and more or less over the bridge on this other side, and is going here further to the south. And Furt, that's the village you see behind here. So this village here, where it's where we are located, and the monastery Stiftsgottweig would be right kind of behind us here, kind of on the screen. So that you can get an impression about the area, how it looks like. The Danube, actually, it's a very important factor here in the area, also plays an important influence to the climate as it works kind of as a kind of air condition in the summertime when it's warm. The Danube gives some cold air, in the wintertime, if it's very cold, then the Danube works like a little bit of a radiator, like a heater. And that's actually also kind of an important factor for the diurnal shift, I think it's called like this, when you have kind of high temperatures between day and night, especially when it becomes to ripening time. In end of August, September, when the grapes are getting ripe, just before harvest, it happens quite often that we have nice and warm temperatures, even hot temperatures during the day, but it gets crisp and cool at night. And this temperature change kind of is important for the aromatic build in the grapes and the fruitiness and like the aromatic components which we have in our wines. All right, I think I gave you some general information about Austrian wine and about Kremstal, about the area and the region. And now let me start talking about our winery. We already heard, Antoinette already told you that our winery has been established in 1722. So that's the picture of our winery, which you also find on our wine labels. And this is how it looks right now. Here again, the winery. Since 2012, that's rather young, we opened a little hotel right next to it. So here we have a small boutique hotel with about 10 rooms. Please feel free to come to us if you want to travel to Austria, and if you want to make a trip in our area, there is a place to stay. And here, that's the Monastery Stiftsgottweig, which I mentioned already before, which is quite significant, and which can be seen from kilometers away already. You go on. Of course, that's most important. Since the winery has been established, it's always been the people behind making the wine and taking care about the land and about the vineyards, and kind of trying hard to bring the terroir into the bottle. That's actually also an aim which I'm following, and we cultivate about 45 hectares, and out of those 45 hectares, we produce about 250,000 bottles of wine, which is actually not a lot. But saying this, it's because we don't irrigate our vineyards. Everything is dry farmed, and of course, then yields not kind of that big, yields are lower. I feel it as an advantage, because when we don't irrigate, the roots of the vines need to grow down into the ground, and then they get the nutrients and like the water supply from the ground, and as the roots need to grow deep, much more characteristic is transported or kind of transformed from the soil to the grapes and then into the wine. So that's, you probably would think about 250,000 bottles from 45 hectares. That's not a lot. It's not a lot, but I think, better not that much, but make it more special. And what's also special is that I only make grapes coming from our own vineyard. So it's all estate grapes, which we are processing to wine. I mentioned already before that most focused is the terroir. I want to bring the characteristic from the vineyard where the grapes are planted, where the grapes are grown, coming into the bottle, which means that I don't interfere in the winery itself that much. Like the quality starts and is created in the vineyard. That's very important, that you only can make great wines out of good grapes. And that's also one of my main targets, to do a very strict grape selection. All the grapes are hand-picked, and it depends on the vintage, how intense we need to work on it. So the last vintage, 2020, that was such a year where it was really demanding. And quite often, like journalists from the press, they are talking about good and bad years. And I always say, well, actually, I think it's not the right characteristic or the right naming. You cannot say it's a good year and a bad year, but you can say it's an easy year and it's a more difficult year. And for example, 2020, so last vintage, was such a little bit more difficult year, where it was rather demanding, as we had unfortunately a little bit of hail right before harvest started, which is always not that ideal, having a hail just that short before like the picking starts, because the berries are already soft, the skins of the berries are soft, and then when you get hail, of course there is some damage done to the grapes and to the berries, which means that when you start picking, when you start the vintage, and you cut off the grapes, that you have to really select carefully and take out manually berry by berry, which you don't like. Of course, that takes long time and costs a lot of money at the end. But I think that's the only way how you can, even on a more difficult year, get a great result and great wines then in the bottle. And of course, all the wines are fermented naturally without any cultivated yeast. So it's all spontaneous fermented to bring those characteristics from the terroir as much as possible into the wines. And actually, then it's the only way of doing it, to work with 100% healthy grapes. No botrytis is used. And then the wine style is very authentic. It's very real, and it's very unplugged, coming from the vineyard. And what's in addition to this, my main focus, that all the wines are elegant and rich in finesse. They are never opulent. They are never fat. This should be like of a fine, elegant style, and should be rather more feminine. This should be nice to drink. They always shouldn't be too high in alcohol, and they are very complex. That's the goal, which is actually much more difficult to create a wine like this. Then on the other hand, it would be easier to have a wine which is a more opulent, which has probably a little bit of residual sugar, and then gives a good mouthfeel and a good roundness, which is okay. But I prefer like the more lean style, the more elegance in the wine. The wines are always dry, and therefore they're kind of, yeah, authentic and character wines. And also I allow a vintage variation, so which is also typical for a wine. For example, let's say 2019 and 2020, there can be a difference. It's not a wine which is uniform. So the wine lives, the grapes lives, the terroir lives, and also the wine style lives. Okay, coming back to the grape varieties, I mentioned before that most of the vineyards in Kremstal planted with Grüner Veltliner, and the second main grape is Riesling. So Grüner Veltliner and Riesling are like the grapes where we have our appellation system for. So, and it's actually quite interesting, because when you bear a closer look on this, or when you take a closer look on Grüner Veltliner and Riesling, and you question yourself, I think Grüner Veltliner and Riesling, those are two grape varieties which have actually not that much in common, because what the one grape likes, the other doesn't, and vice versa. So how is it possible that those two grapes can be both together the main grapes within a region or within an area? And the answer is because we have different type of soils. We have a very kind of versatile, or not versatile, we have like different soil types, and sometimes the variation from one type of soil to the other is changing very, very quickly, just within a few meters, so with a few hundred meters. Grüner Veltliner is a grape variety which likes sandy, loamy soils where there is a good water supply. It's a grape variety which is the typical Austrian grape variety, and I always characterize Grüner Veltliner also being of a typical Austrian habit, because Austrians, they like to drink a lot, they like to eat a lot, they are funny guys, and that's what Grüner Veltliner is about as well a little bit, because Grüner Veltliner needs a lot of water, it needs a lot of nutrient, and that's typical for Austria. Or for the Austrians, let's say like this. But we have those soils, like the soils where the water supply can be guaranteed, where the water can be stored. Soils like Loess, or like the wet lands close to the river, where the water supply is good, and that's where we plant Grüner Veltliner. On the other hand, we have soils where you find rocks. So the primary rock you find granite, you find schist, you find amphipolite, you find gneiss, all those type of soils, they are very ideal for Riesling. They don't give that much water supply, the drainage is much better, but that's what Riesling likes. And therefore, we can cultivate those two grape varieties to a very kind of high kind of, I would say, yeah, to a good to a very good extent, or to a very good profession for coming out those wines. As far as our winery is concerned, as far as I'm concerned, or we are concerned, Weingut Mallard is concerned, we always have had an additional focus of Burgundy varieties to Grüner Veltliner and Riesling. So Grüner Veltliner and Riesling, of course, also are the main grapes for us. But in addition to this, we always planted Chardonnay, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, and Pinot Noir. And not only for still wines, but also for sparkling wines. Sparkling wine is an important kind of product we have in our portfolio, because my dad has been the first wine grower in Austria who started making own sparkling wine. We are doing this since 1976. Of course, there has been sparkling wine in Austria before that, but only from like the bigger trading companies buying wine, or maybe just buying grapes, or buying wine and making a sparkling wine out of the wines they bought on a rather large scale. But As far as this kind of a wine growing estate is concerned, we've been the first where we cultivate our own vineyards, we take our own grapes, we harvest our own grapes, we kind of make wine out of our own grapes, and then we make sparkling wine out of our wines. Everything is bottle fermented, everything is disgorged on site. Here you can see in the pictures how it looks. We have a lot of bottles lying in our cellar because allow quite a long lease contact time before we disgorge. For the sparkling wine, it's the same philosophy I have as for the still wines. I want to bring the terroir into the wine, and therefore all the sparkling wines are without dosage, so they are all brut nature, without any sugar added when they are disgorged, and therefore allow some extra time on the lees, also in order to get a good balance and a good creaminess to the wine, but without being sweet. Okay, now let me talk a little bit about our appellation system, which means how we organize the wines we are producing in our area. And that's actually easy to explain because it always depends where the grapes are coming from. So there are actually three levels of origin, starting with the level of origin of the region. You see the first kind of layer, the first base is the region. So grapes are coming from the region, which in our case would be Kremstal. So when the name is just, when a wine is just named with Kremstal, then the grapes are coming from different vineyards, maybe from different villages, but within one region, which would be Kremstal in our case. The next origin level would be village, would be the village. So the village wines, where the grapes are coming from different vineyards, but all within the same village. So in my case, it would be Furt. Furt, that's the name of the village, or Furt Pite. When the grapes are coming just from this village, we also name those vines as Furt. And then at the top, at the peak, that's the kind of lowest, or like let's say lowest, like the smallest kind of area where the grapes are coming from, that's a single vineyard, or Lage in Austria. And you can see on the label, and that's good because since I think 2015, by Austrian wine law, you have to write the name Reed in front of a single vineyard so that people already kind of easily distinguish that the name is dedicated to a single vineyard. And then the grapes are just coming from one particular vineyard, which is very important because, as I mentioned before, we have that many vineyards and that many different type of soils that kind of a characteristic to a wine very often is kind of related to a vineyard and what's special about. And at that point, I also like to mention that there is an association in Austria, which is called the Österreichische Traditionsweingüter. If you translate it into English, it's the Traditional Austrian Wineries. It's an association which has been formed in 1992, starting where a few wine producers in the Danube area they linked together and said, okay, we have the same target, we have the same aim, because we want to monitor and we want to figure out from which particular vineyards the grapes are coming, making the best wines in our area. And for those vineyards, a kind of classification started. The best vineyards got the extra name as Erste Lage, and maybe in the future then also as Große Lage. But so far, Erste Lage vineyards are classified by Österreichische Traditionsweingüter. For 2 years now, two other bigger areas joined the philosophy of Österreichische Traditionsweingüter, which was Vienna and Carnuntum. And I think there is more to come. And of course, right now it's still a kind of a private classification, but the target and the aim would be to bring this vineyard classification into a legal status for all Austria, that those classification then can be applied for all the vineyards all over Austria. Okay. Coming back to the village wines. As I said, that I'm making wine just from our own vineyards, and all the vineyards are within foot. We are starting with kind of my appellation within my winery, or the wines coming from my winery, at the level of the village wines. And within the village wines, we have different grape varieties, which is Grüneveltliner and Riesling, being like the appellation grape varieties. When you find Kremstal on the label, it only can be Grüneveltliner and Riesling, as those grape varieties being the leading grape varieties. The other grape varieties here, let's say Zweigelt or Pinot Noir or the Burgundy varieties, they would have the appellation Niederösterreich, which is like a more kind of wider spread origin, and not Kremstal, because Kremstal is just kind of reserved for Grüneveltliner and Riesling. But as far as we are concerned, we have next to Grüneveltliner and Riesling also a rosé under the name Furt, and the Zweigelt and the Pinot Noir. And about today's tasting, we have three village wines which we taste: the Grüneveltliner, the Riesling, and the Pinot Noir, all named with the village name Furt. And then the single vineyards. The single vineyards, they are of course most important to us. We have different single vineyards where we cultivate our grapes, and we have different terroirs, as I mentioned before, which are good for the different grape varieties. There is a single vineyard called Höhlgraben and Gottschelle, where we plant Grüneveltliner. Gottschelle, by the way, is one of the vineyards being classified as a Erste Lage. And you can see here this little symbol, 1 ÖTV, which is for Erste Lage. So it's kind of a Premier Cru ÖTV. It's the abbreviation for Österreichische Traditionsweingüter, so the Austrian traditional wineries. Then we have Steinbüchel, Silberbichl, and Pfaffenberg, those three vineyards where we plant Riesling. So Höhlgraben and Gottschelle have more loess, have more sand in the soil. Steinbühl, Silberbichl, and Pfaffenberg, those are sites where it's very rocky. And I will talk in particular about Gottschelle and Steinbühl afterwards, because we are tasting the wines coming from those vineyards. And then there are another vineyard called Am Zaum, where we plant Pinot Blanc. There is Hochrhein, where we plant Chardonnay. It's Zistel, where we plant Pinot Gris. And there is Satzen, where we plant Pinot Noir in St. Laurent. Saying that, those are the two wines from the single vineyards which we taste tonight, which is Gottschelle and Steinbühl. And here actually on the bottles, you also can see that there is a difference, because the village wines, the winery picture on the label is always in the color, in the same color where we have our kind of cap on top. So it's yellow for the whites and it's red for the red. And the single vineyard wines, there is a kind of more elegant gray on the label where the winery is. Kind of shows the winery in gray. That's a kind of an easy characteristic to distinguish between the village wines and the single vineyard wines. All right, so I think I talked a lot, and I think you already want to get the first wine in your glass and start tasting. The tasting order today would be, I thought we will start with the two Grüneveltliner, because then you can compare the same grape variety first coming from different vineyards within Furt, and then just from one particular from the Ried Gottschelle. We will do the same for the Riesling, then continue with the Furt Riesling, and then with the Ried Steinbühl. And at the end, we take the red wine, we take the Furt Pinot Noir. All right, so let's get started with Furt Grüneveltliner. Actually, for the village wines, here, of course, the focus is more to the grape variety. So I like to show and express what the grape variety is about, what the typicity of the grape variety is about and is kind of be expected. Grüne Veltliner, it's a grape variety, which is actually great because it's super versatile. It's kind of one of the all-round grape varieties, I would say. It's a grape variety express different type of wines. You can have a wine which is easy going, easy to drink, which you can start drinking for breakfast. You can go on for lunch and dinner. You can drink it as a midnight snack. It will work all the time. It will work for all different type of food. It will work for all different type of companies. And quite often when you don't know, well, I'm not sure what wine to pick either, because you're not sure what your kind of company likes, or when you are not sure if a wine is matching to a type of food, to a type of dish, to the type of food you're eating, Grüne Veltliner is always a good match. It's a match because it's not too intense of flavors. You have some good minerality and good spiciness, but it's always nice in balance. And that's the great thing about Grüne Veltliner. It's nice in balance. It has some acidity, but not too much. It has some flavors and some fruitiness, but also not too much. It's always in the right place. And it also working out for easy drinking wines, but it's also working out, which you will discover in a minute, then for high end quality wines coming from a single vineyard. And here the Furt Grüne Veltliner, here it's dedicated to the grape variety. So you should get those peppery notes, you should get a little bit of herbal notes, some kind of apple flavors coming through, maybe a little bit of lemon. And it's a wine which should kind of bring fun to you, no matter when you open it, no matter when you drink it, or who you are kind of enjoying the wine with. It's a wine which is, yeah, always always working out, I would say. It's not too high in alcohol, so it's easier to drink not only a glass, but also a second or even a bottle. That's not a problem. You don't get drunk that easily because it's not that heavy. It's nice. It's nice and light. And it's like the everyday Grüne Veltliner, I would call it like this. All right. I will probably move on to the Grüne Veltliner Kopfschelle, which is then now a little bit of a different characteristic, as here the grapes are coming from just one particular site. And here it's more about the terroir, it's more about the soil which we are talking about. So it's not that much anymore that I really want to bring Grüne Veltliner in a bottle. It's more about bringing Kopfschelle in the bottle, because Kopfschelle, it's special. Kopfschelle, it's a site which was first mentioned in 1341. And in general, the single vineyards have a long history, and we are actually lucky to have the monastery right in our area, because the monastery actually was finished in 1082. So since 1082, monks live in the monastery, and what monks like to do, they like to have a look in the countryside, to have a they like to have a look on the landscape around, and they like to monitor and write things down, which is great. So since that days, we know a lot of we have a lot of information what's going on in our area, because the monks kind of noticed that for us, and they wrote it down so that we actually can have this information that we know since 1341. Kopfschelle is named Kopfschelle, and where the name is coming from, that actually the name has an origin more in the more alpine part of Austria, where people in those times used the word Götze as a word for a kind of significant drop-off in the mountain. You know, when there is a mountain ridge and there is a drop-off, and then there is maybe a wall of rock which goes down deep for a couple of hundred meters, that was the name they used for Götze. And the Götze was transformed also into our area. But of course, we don't have these high mountains here. But what we have a plateau. The Gottschalle, actually, it's a plateau. It's a plateau which has been formed after the last ice ages, about 20, 25,000 years ago, when the glaciers melt. And then the stony dust, which was found underneath the ice, was blown off with the wind. And this stony dust, that's the loess soil, which settled down in our area. And maybe here I will move to the next slide, because here it's a picture of the vineyard. Here you can see, here it's the monastery on top, which we've been talking before a couple of times already. And right underneath here, this plateau, this is the Gottschalle. And a little bit more here to the west, there is the next single vineyard called Silberbichl. That would be a vineyard where we plant Riesling. I mentioned it before when I showed to you the other vineyards where we are working on. And why do I mention this? Because the Silberbichl actually gave the wind shade to Gottschalle. You have to think about that the main wind direction we have in our area is from west to east. And so the loess soil has been brought with the wind in those times when the glaciers have been melted and the stony dust has been kind of flowing up in the air, and the wind brought it to our area. And then kind of the loess settled down here, the Gottschalle, this is a kind of a plateau where the loess actually could stay. Because like the neighboring vineyard, the Silberbichl, which is another hill going up here, made the wind shade here to Gottschalle. And so the wind could not blow the loess further. So the loess stayed here. And actually here, there's a little kind of little canyon, a natural canyon where there is a way up here. And here you can see the loess walls, so that the loess built up for several meters. And this gives this typical characteristic to the wine. So you have the loess, but at the same time, you also have gravel. So those are round stones coming from the ancient Danube, which also was kind of a riverbed there 1,000 years ago. And this gives the characteristic to the wine. So here, the characteristic in the wine, it's more about the terroir, about the soil. Where you have this more yellow fruit characteristic, you have this creaminess, you also have this spiciness coming from the gravel, which is very typical. And of course, I have to mention at this point as well that it's not 200% fair to kind of totally one by one compare those two wines, because the Furt Grunewaldina, which you just tasted before, was vintage 2016. And here the Gottschalle is vintage 2015. As I mentioned at the beginning, I always allow a vintage variation. And you have to know that 2016 was a much cooler year than 2015 was. 2016 was cooler, the harvests started later, so the vegetation period started later. Which means we had a little bit more acidity in the wine, we had a little bit more crispiness to the wine, which also probably could be detectable. And 15 was a little bit riper, a little bit riper year. So you also can see here, there is a little bit more power, a little bit more body in the wine. We have 13.5 alcohol, which is actually, I would say, probably the higher limit to my wines. Normally the alcohol level is always between 12 and 13 in kind of exceptional years where it was a little bit warmer, then it's maybe going up to 13.5, but not more. And this also gives kind of an additional characteristic to the wine, or makes the wine how it tastes like, that also the vintage gives an impact and influence. Wines like this, I have to say, have a very long aging potential. So now we have 21, the vintage is 15, so it's also more than 5 years now in the bottle. And I could think easy of another 5, 10, 20, 30 years of bottle maceration, which would be possible. It's always like from your personal perspective, when you want to open a bottle of wine or those bottles of wine to drink it. What do you prefer? You preferred that you have a little bit more primary fruit, then you probably open the bottle even a little bit earlier. But when you're looking for like the secondary flavors, and when the wine gets some time and can develop, gets a little bit softer, gets a little bit more in balance, a little bit more mature, then you can easily wait 5, 7, 10, 15 years to drink such a bottle of wine. This wine has been fermented in wood casks and stays also on the full lees for quite a while. The whole fermentation process takes time, and that's also the reason why the wine can have some time to develop, and the aging potential is kind of rather long. The Grüne Veltliner Furt you had before, that has been fermented in stainless steel, and the Furt wines, they are bottled normally, let's say, between March and April the following year. For the single vineyard wines, I even take longer time to have more time on the lees, to have more time for the autolysis of the yeast, and to express the character much more. Actually, maybe also a word for dishes. As I said, Grüne Veltliner is a very versatile wine, a very versatile variety, actually matching to a whole different type of dishes and all different type of food. As far as classical Austrian food is concerned, there is a dish called Wiener Schnitzel. I'm sure you know it. And also the Tafelspitz, that's a boiled beef, normally with spinach or with horseradish and some roasted potatoes. That's great with Grüne Veltliner, but Grüne Veltliner fits to a range from white meat to also darker meat. If the meat is, for example, boiled, or if it's prepared in a more natural way, it's great to fish. It's great to freshwater fish. We have droughts very often here in Austria, which is great with Grüne Veltliner. And it's actually always a good match to all different type of food. All right, so moving on to Riesling. And here we have actually what we had before, Furt Grüne Veltliner, now it's the Furt Riesling. So here again, dedicated to the grape variety. So this wine should express Riesling. It should express the aromatic of Riesling, what you expect when you open a bottle of Riesling and when you pour a glass of Riesling, that you get some more acidity. Grüne Veltliner is a grape variety which shows a little bit more acidity compared to Grüne Veltliner. It's a little bit kind of, more crisp. You have like stone fruit characteristic, you have a little bit of peach, a little bit of apricots, some herbal notes. And it's just a little bit more precise wine. It's a little bit more challenging maybe due to the acidity. Here we also have vintage 2016, where I think it was a great year for both for Grüne Veltliner and Riesling, as the typicity of the grape variety, especially in those years where it's a little bit cooler, it's even more precise, I would say. And similar to the Grüne Veltliner, here also with the Riesling, it's a Riesling which you can just enjoy how it is. It's not too high in alcohol, it's light to drink. It's a fun drinking Riesling, I would say, an easygoing Riesling. But here at this point, maybe mentioning again that, as I said at the beginning, as we only use our own grapes, even for those entry level wines, we have already a certain character to these wines, and also a kind of a certain, I would say, quality level, as we have 100% for all these grapes, even for those grapes which we are making our kind of entry level wines out of. All right, and then the single vineyard Riesling from Steinbühl. This is actually a very special wine to me, and I'm very often being asked, as we have a very kind of wide portfolio with a lot of different wines, with a lot of different wines from different single vineyards. And when people are coming to the winery, or if I meet people at the wine tasting and they don't know our wines, and then they see, oh, wow, they're making so many different wines. And then very often I'm asked, okay, well, what's your most favorite wine, or what's your best wine? And that's, I always kind of answering the question, giving the comparison about kids and saying, okay, if you have kids, if you have more than one kid, if maybe two or three, then somebody will ask you, what's your favorite kid? And then you probably also, and that's the same for me. Of course, I love all my wines, and every particular wine in the portfolio has the chance to be the best within the portfolio. And every wine I'm producing gets the amount of attention it needs. And otherwise I couldn't kind of cope with that many different wines, and I could not, I wouldn't see it as all right to have that many wines, because only because every wine gets the same attention, then it's working out. But what I can say, and that's what I'm saying always, and that's what I'm saying also tonight, is that there is one particular wine which describes the style of how I like to have all my wines the best. And that's probably the wine from the single vineyard Steinbühl. And why is this? Because this site is so unique and offers such a unique characteristic, that this elegance and finesse I explained before, which I want to have in all my wines, is shown to the largest and highest extent from grapes coming from this particular site, Steinbühl. Steinbühl, what does it mean? If you translate it into English, it would be the stony hill, Steinbühel. Bühel, it's an old actually saying in Austria for hill, Bühel or Bichel. And Stein, that's stone. So people figured out already in 1322 that there are a lot of stones in the soil. And that's why they gave this name to this particular vineyard. Now we know that this stone is granolite. And granolite, it's a form of granite. And normally, so granite is also kind of said to be one of the primary rock soils. And normally this granolite is covered by other soil material because this granolite is very, very old. It's up to 200 million years old. And normally you have loess, you have conglomerate soil, you have soil coming from after the ice ages or from the ancient river covering this granolith. But here this Steinbühl is like a little island in the big ocean. It's maybe, I always like to compare it like Hawaii in the Pacific. It's an island. There is the ocean all around, and all of a sudden there is some islands are coming up. And so it's a little bit with Steinbühl. You have, of course, different soil types around, but in this particular site, and this site is not that big, it's only a few hectares, the granolith is up to the surface, or at least as far that the roots can grow into the granolith. And therefore, the characteristic from those grapes, from this wine, is so unique and so special. And as this site is very, very kind of special and dry and dense, and the minerality is shown that great, it's of a signature wine, because this wine gives those elegance, this elegance and this characteristic, this finesse to the wine, which I like to have actually in all my wines. But here the expression is probably the most intense. Here again, vintage 2016, which I believe is for further development in the bottle. I think this particular wine with this particular vintage will stay for another 30, 40 years and keep on going for a great development. have a look here on the vineyard. That was just last year when we digged out a part or like a little hole to see on kind of the soil profile. Here you see that the topsoil, the darker soil, which is the humus layer, it's just a few centimeters. It's not very deep. And from here on, already the rocky soil, the transformed granulate starts and it's going all the way down. Here, the darker stones here and here, there's this little dark spot that's parts of amphibolite. And this is a very particular kind of a very special site to me. It's a special site for planting Riesling. And also you can see here, no irrigation, even in these vineyards. I'm very lucky and I'm happy that those vineyards are rather old already. So those vineyards had been planted 30 to 40 years ago. Of course, I have to mention, climate was a little bit different. We had a little bit more constant temperatures. We had a little bit more constant precipitation. So it was actually possible to plant a vineyard on such a soil without irrigation 30 years ago. I'm not sure how it will work out if it comes the time when I need to replant this vineyard. But yeah, that's why I'm treating these vines as my holy treasure that they will keep alive for many, many more years, and that they will give those particular great grapes for making these character wines. That's actually the heritage, what I'm taking over. It's not so much the winery, it's more the vineyards. And we have some vineyards when we've heard that the winery was established in 1722. We have vineyards since the beginning, some here in Steinbühl, some here, some others in Höhlgraben, which is another Grüner-Veltliner site, which is right next to the winery. And this is actually what I'm aiming for, to treat my vineyards very kind of sensitive, and that my vineyards give the fruit I need to make the wines you tasted today. I hope you like them. I hope you could feel that there is kind of a signature running through the wines, no matter, oh, actually, no, we are not finished yet. We have to taste another wine. Sorry. Of course, we have to taste the Pinot Noir. But yeah, even here you can see that that's actually what our passion is for, that we are living for our lands and for our vineyard. But we have another wine to taste, and this is Pinot Noir. This is the Pinot Noir Furt. Again, as for the other Furt wines as well, for the Grüner Veltliner and Riesling, which you had before, we have the Pinot Noir. And Pinot Noir, it's a grape variety which fits actually very, very well to our area. Of course, yeah, we mentioned before Grüner Veltliner and more actually the white wines, the white wine grape varieties, those which are known for the Danube area, for Kremstal. But as far as red wine is concerned, Pinot Noir, it's the grape to mention. Because Pinot Noir is a grape variety which is totally different to any other red grape, I would say. I would say there is white wine, there is red wine, and there is Pinot Noir, because Pinot Noir is different. Pinot Noir is more feminine, it's light, it's kind of, even if you have a look on the color, it's not that deep colored like any other red grape variety. It has a little bit more structure, it has a little bit of acidity, it's very fruit driven. That's what Pinot Noir is about. Actually, of course, there is also Pinot Noir from warmer areas or countries, and maybe they are good as well. But I think Pinot Noir, it's a grape variety that the characteristic of the grape variety only is working out if it's kind from more of a cooler climate country and a cooler climate area. And when you bear in mind the graphic I showed you at the beginning, maybe I can just go very quickly over or back again. as there is also a difference within Austria. Here you see again the climate influences from west and from north. It's the cooler influence from south and from east, it's the warmer influence. And coming back again here to Austria, then you can see that especially here, that's marked in red here, because here it's the Burgenland area, and that's the area where the red wine, more of the like the main red wine vineyards are planted here in Austria. And here the grape varieties are Blaufränkisch and Zweigelt, which is typical for Austria, but also Merlot and those grape varieties, which you know, which needs a lot of sun, which needs a little bit of more sunshine hours, and they are doing fine here. But here in Kremstal, where we located, where it's a little bit cooler, that's actually the place to grow Pinot Noir, as Pinot Noir likes it a little bit cooler to express kind of the fruit structure, the finesse, the elegance, the more lighter style. And we also have the soils, because you have to think about that very close to the river. Maybe you see it here a little bit. This area here, where it's close to the river here and also here, this used to be areas when in times where the river Danube was not regulated, it was a kind of an escape area for the river to go over the border if it was raining a lot, that the river actually could meandrate, that there was kind of area to take all this water if there was a lot of rain. And nowadays, the riverbed is kind of man-made. The riverbed is regulated also by kind of, steps in between, where you have dams also to create electricity. Like those kind of floodlands now are available for vineyards. And that's the vineyards where we plant the Burgundy varieties. And that's very typical and very special also for our particular location, which I said, okay, that's kind of an additional focus to the Mallard Winery, as where we have vineyards, especially here in this area, where there is a lot of gravel coming from the Danube. And this gravel has a very high content of chalk. And this chalkiness, it's important for the Burgundy varieties. In Burgundy itself, if you think about Burgundy in France, there you have limestone, and limestone is rich in chalk. Limestone is coming from the ocean. But here, it's not limestone. Here it's like the gravel coming not from the ocean, but coming from the Danube. The result is, I wouldn't say the same, but it's similar. Both is rich in chalk, it's high in chalk. And that's what the Burgundy varieties like, to express the minerality, to express their finesse, and therefore we have also the right terroir for planting Pinot Noir. And the Pinot Noir food, that's what we tasting right now, that's the Pinot Noir, which is also dedicated to be an easy drinking wine. It's kind of bright, it's shiny, it's bringing strawberry and raspberry character to the wine, as Pinot Noir shows. It's fermented in stainless steel and then developed in bigger wood casks, so there is no oak influence, so that the fruitiness, the fruity character is upfront. It's also bottled rather a little bit earlier, that again, this fruity, lively character can be brought into the bottle, and it should be Pinot Noir, which should kind of also make people enjoying it. And in Austria, as Austria is not so popular for Pinot Noir, and people are probably not that much used to drink Pinot Noir, although I have to say it's more and more becoming popular, because the wine style or like the trend drinking wine also develops a little bit more to the lighter wines, to the more elegant wines. And then there is no doubt that Pinot Noir is one of the grape varieties which are doing the job. And here it's a wine where people actually can try how Pinot Noir should taste like. It's a wine for very good value for money. So it's not that difficult to buy this bottle. It's not so expensive, and then you can give it a try. You can try it out. It's a wine which can be used for by the glass pourings in the restaurants, and then people can give it a try, and they can try a glass of Pinot Noir and see how it feels, how it tastes, and probably then it's a new discovery. And it's a new discovery to see that red wine also can be fun, and it's not necessarily necessarily hurting you, as a wine is too high in tannins or too much flavored with alcohol. It's too high in alcohol. So that's all what Pinot Noir is not about. And yeah, that's what totally fits to our philosophy: being elegant, being fine and finesse driven, showing the fruitiness. And I like it a lot now, especially when even also in Austria, hopefully the warmer weather is coming up soon, and when we can be outside, and it's also a wine, a good red wine for the summertime. You can chill it a little bit. It should be consumed a little bit cooler than another red wine, and then it's a nice refreshing red wine also as an alternative to a white wine, I would say. All right, I think now that was the last wine for today. Yeah, I hope you like the wines, you keep them in good memory, and you figure out that there is a style from one wine to the other, no matter if it's the Grenoblina Furt, if it's the Gotchele, if it's the Riesling Furt or the Steinbühl, or now the Pinot Noir, that kind of a personal note, a personal handwriting is detectable. That would be kind of my biggest compliment if you can figure this out, that the style of the winemaker is detectable in all the wines you tasted. Well, then I just thank you for attention. Thank you very much taking the time, joining our seminar, our masterclass with Kremstal wine and wines from Weingut Mallard. And please go ahead and keep me busy with answering your questions.
Thank you so much, Michael. That was an incredible presentation, and we don't have any questions at the moment, so we'll bring this wrapped up. So thanks again for joining us today, Michael and Lewis. A very special thanks to Stephen Diaz for selecting the wines for this evening's tasting. And thanks to all watching for your interest in the great wines of Austria. We encourage everyone to visit our website calendar at corkandfork.co to view the Austrian wine events we are hosting with some of the region's greatest producers, just like Michael Mallard. Thanks again. It was very informative and quite enjoyable. So, Michael, are there any final words before we say goodnight?
Well, of course, it's, I would say I became used to talking to my screen and seeing you on the screen or seeing people on the screen. I hope time will change soon to a way that it will be possible that you can come to us and visit us at the winery, or I can come to Washington and do a tasting with Cork and Fork here at your place, and doing it kind of from face to face and physically, and kind of talking to each other. But I very much appreciate and enjoyed the opportunity that I can present the wines on this method and online to you, and I hope you're all doing fine. You come as good as possible to this challenging time, and maybe a glass of our wine is helping a little bit.
Absolutely. I'm sure you'll have some visitors coming to see you once the restrictions are lifted from Washington, D.C. And in the meantime, I wish everyone a lovely, lovely evening. Thank you so much. And I'm going to end the meeting for all. Thank you. Good night.